Now, before you start picturing the eclipse, we're going to begin this hour by picturing something much more familiar, especially here in the Puget Sound area. Picture an extreme introvert with glasses, taped together glasses, coding in their parents' basement. Or a software engineer who wears sandals and a hoodie to work, yet is wealthy enough to own an airplane for personal use. My next guest says that those are two major stereotypes of people who work in tech. And she says not only are those stereotypes wrong, they are dangerous. New York Times reporter Claire Kane Miller has written an article called Tech's Damaging Myth of the Loner Genius Nerd. Claire, welcome to KUOW.
It's great to be here.
We've all seen the loner genius nerd in pop culture. Did it used to be true?
So one of the most interesting things I found out when reporting this is that it was never true. This has always sort of been the stereotype ever since the computer industry really took off in the 60s and 70s and people started making movies and writing books about it. There's always been the stereotype, but it was never true. It really started, programming really started in university computer labs at places like Stanford and MIT, and they were very social places where people, you know, worked overnight ordering Chinese food and pizza delivery and talking about what they were working on. And then later in Silicon Valley garages, it's never has it really been about I'm doing this all on your own.
Isn't coding more solitary than a lot of jobs? I have a friend whose husband is a software engineer, and he works by himself at home, and he's, you know, does it for hours at a time, long into the night. Is there no useful truth in that?
Sure, there are pieces of the job, really just like most jobs, that are solitary. But the people who I've talked to who work in the industry, and I bet the software engineer you know would say the same thing, is that a lot of it involves a lot more teamwork than you might realize. There is stuff like, you know, you need to coordinate with the legal department or the PR department when you're making a product, but you also need to work with your fellow engineers. One of the things you do when you write code is it goes into a code base that hundreds or thousands of engineers will use, maybe years later, long after you're gone. So even if you are not, you know, talking with them as you're building it, you need to write it and name the things that you build in a way that other people will be able to work on them later. So there's a lot of teamwork involved.
And I opened up, Claire, by saying that this myth is not only wrong, but it's dangerous. What do you mean by that?
What it does is it really attracts people into the industry who maybe don't feel so comfortable working with other people, don't feel the need to work on those skills in themselves. And then when they find out that they actually need to have good teamwork, it doesn't go so well. You know, if you've never worked on that very much and all of a sudden you have to do something with colleagues, there's a lot of communication problems. But one of the most dangerous parts, in my opinion, is that if you lack empathy, that you know, interpersonal skill, which is basically trying to imagine what someone else is thinking or feeling and trying to live in their shoes, it really hurts the product development because you're building these tech products for other people. And I think a good example of that is Google Glass. Google built it. It was a very technologically difficult thing that they pulled off. But what they didn't understand is that typical people didn't really want that or need that. And it ended up failing because they lacked that empathy to be able to stand in someone else's shoes.
And are you saying that Google Glass, that product, was affected by a lack of empathy or a lack of women making it or both?
I think that particular product actually had a lot of women engineers on the team who I interviewed at the time. I think it was a lack of empathy for users. But not having women on a team makes a big difference, too. One example was when Apple introduced its health app for the first time in the iPhone. It tracked so many things. It tracked, you know, your sleep and your exercise and your sodium and all these things. It didn't track menstrual cycles. And most women will tell you that Period Trackers is one of the most used health apps on their phone. And I don't know if there were men on Apple's team, but I'd venture to guess that there probably weren't.
You brought up empathy and collaboration. I brought up women because I think America is really thinking about women in tech, especially since that Google engineer got fired for writing that women are unsuited to software engineering. And you said that he was wrong on his biology, but also wrong about working in tech.
So he made this distinction. He said women care more about feelings and people, and men care more about systems and logic. And we can debate whether or not that is true. I don't think that any scientist would say that you can actually generalize entire populations that broadly. But regardless, Tech isn't just about, you know, sure, you need logic and you need rational thinking, but you also need this sort of teamwork. And economists have shown that that jobs with a combination of math skills and people skills are by far the fastest growing in the last 15 years, and software engineering is a major one. But I think he missed the fact that the job really does require people skills.
I'm talking again with New York Times reporter Claire Kane Miller, who wrote in Upshot this article called Tech's Damaging Myth of the Loner Genius Nerd. Here in Seattle, of course, we have Amazon, for one. Do their products seem to you to lack collaboration or empathy or a woman's influence, any of those things?
I don't want to personally judge any of Amazon's products. I do think one of the interesting examples, though, when we're thinking about empathy and we're thinking about people with diverse experiences like women and other kinds of diversity, is these new digital home assistants. So there's the Amazon Echo, you know, when you ask Alexa to do something for you. And the engineers who are building these things, they really need, these things are, you know, operating in someone's house and family. So they really need to have that sort of empathy to imagine what the user, what their home situation might be like and how this might affect them, and also, you know, diversity to understand, say, you speak to Alexa with an accent, or, you know, say you're in an abusive relationship and you are a woman in a household who needs to keep certain things private from her husband, you know, things like this that really require a diversity of thought. One funny example was when a child ordered a $160 dollhouse on the Echo through Alexa and 4 pounds of cookies. And she just asked Alexa to send it, and Alexa did. And the Amazon box shows up the next day. So, you know, there are parental controls on the Echo. I will say that Amazon had thought of that, but it's important to be able to think about people in other situations. For example, if you're a parent, if the engineers building it aren't a parent, they might not have thought of that.
Right. So part of this is about how yes, there was a time when writing computer code may have been a much more fringy thing, but obviously computing is in our living rooms and computing brings things to our front door.
It's really in so many more parts of our lives, I think, than people realize, and humans are making these decisions. You know, we know that it determines who people date if they're using Match.com or any of those kinds of things. It's also, you know, what kind of loans you get. If you apply for a loan, it's an algorithm that's determining and advising what kind of loan you get. If you send in your resume, it's often an algorithm that's doing the first scan of your resume to decide if it should even be passed on to HR. These are just like all over our lives is affected by the decisions that humans are making, the humans who write the algorithms and make the software. And so, you know, it's really valuable both for those humans to have a diversity of experience and also to have the interpersonal skills and the empathy to think about what their users will need and want.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. Do you think that Facebook is it a platform that lacks people skills?
Again, I don't know that I want to comment specifically on judging them myself, but I know, you know, there was a ton of debate during the presidential campaign about the fact that that Facebook was showing people political articles that matched their own viewpoint, and was this building sort of bubbles where people were unable to see other people's viewpoints. I think, for one, that's an example of how these algorithms really affect our lives in more ways than we might realize. It might affect who we vote for and, you know, who we socialize with and what kind of views we're exposed to. Also, after this criticism, after the election, Facebook started putting more human editors on that algorithm to say that, you know, sometimes we do need these different human points of view to influence the technology.
I didn't know until I read your piece, Claire, that Google Plus used to require that users make their name and photo and gender public, and that seemed logical to it sounds like men who wrote that up.
Yep, that was all men on the team who made that decision, that one of the things you had to make public when you signed up for the social network was your gender. And, you know, as many women can tell you, if you say you're a woman online, that opens you to a huge amount of harassment. And, you know, the guy who was leading that project now says if there had been a woman on the team, we wouldn't have made that mistake. But it was a mistake, and it was just because we were blind to that.
Again, this is Claire Kane Miller with the New York Times, and the piece is Tech's Damaging Myth of the Loner Genius Nerd. Clearly something we think about here in the Seattle area, as well as lots of big cities. And you taught me, Claire, that computer programming was originally considered a woman's job.
That's right. There used to be a job called computer, and a computer was a woman. They programmed a lot during World War II. Women were programmers for NASA. It was considered sort of a routine clerical job. It wasn't even a super high-status job, and mostly women were doing it. It wasn't until about the 1960s that it began to professionalize into the job we know today. And as when many things go from a lower status to a professional job, it went from female to male. And at that point is really when men tried to put a stamp of masculinity on it because it had been a woman's job and because it wasn't a job that really fit with a lot of what was considered masculine in occupations at that time, which was, you know, either very physical work, blue-collar work, or, you know, being, you know, a professional athlete or those kind of things. It wasn't that kind of job. And so, you know, the historians who I've talked to who had some really interesting points of view on this said that men really tried to masculinize it in order to get over some of that insecurity about the occupation itself. And what came out was this, you know, this nerd who was a man, maybe with these like taped glasses, who was associated with other men, and there wasn't a lot of room for women in that picture.
Do computer engineers who deal more directly with users make more money or less money than engineers who work behind the scenes on something like data storage?
The ones who work on the parts of the product that users interact with, they make less money. Those are called front-end engineers, and there is a bias in Silicon Valley and, you know, Silicon Valley writ large, including the Seattle area, that those are less valuable jobs, and that's why they're paid less. They're also more likely to be done by women, as many jobs that pay less are and as many jobs that involve interaction with people are. But the people who I've talked to who have worked in tech and have done both jobs say, in fact, they're equally challenging. And in many ways, that front-end engineering is even more challenging than the back-end. But it's yet again one of these biases about both interpersonal skills and about women that the tech industry has just perpetuated.
So, Claire, to sum this up and for people maybe just tuning in, will you just highlight your main point of how the myth of the loner genius nerd in tech is not just about this famous Google memo, but it really affects a lot of our lives?
That's right. So we have this myth that the people who make technology are these loner nerds. And first of all, it's never been true. Second of all, it really deters talented people from the industry. And this is not just women. It's all sorts of people, including men who don't think that sounds like a great job description and who don't identify with that. And the more that this happens, the more that we deter these, you know, a broader group of people from the industry, the more that these products that affect every part of our lives are going to be built by people with only one set of experiences. And that's not going to serve any of us well.
We might even push in our children who seem to fit the stereotype, channel them toward the computer sciences and other kids away from that.
That's right. So, you know, when there are kids who don't really love to socialize, who aren't super comfortable out on the playground, but they really like computers and math and building, what parents do and what teachers do, which makes a lot of sense, is say, oh, maybe you should consider computers and engineering. But what happens is that it just perpetuates it. It's not like those kids shouldn't go into computers and engineering. That's wonderful. But what can happen is computer science classes, which they don't right now, can start to teach a broader variety of subjects to start to do team projects instead of just assigning solo projects, to assign some liberal arts courses where you're thinking about, you know, maybe the history of technology and where you're thinking about some of these ethical questions about, you know, who algorithms are biased against, and, you know, teaching some of those skills along with the coding skills.
So much to think about here. Claire Kane Miller is a reporter with Upshot for the New York Times, and we are tweeting out a link right now to her article headlined Tech's Damaging Myth of the Loner Genius Nerd. So relevant here in Seattle area. So great to talk with you, Claire. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me.